And
flies.
We are going to start with a, we're going to start out of order.
Find out.
On House Bill 2191, and we're going to open a public hearing. House Bill 2191.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2191 changes the term fountain to ornamental water feature in the list of landscaping features that a licensed landscape contractor is authorized to do. It also defines the term ornamental water feature.
Thank you, Mr. Stenbridge. And we have a very long witness list. This is very controversial. Only one, actually. Ken Trudell.
Chair, members of the committee, have my second hat on. Today I'm the administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. And the bill you have before you, House Bill 2191, is geared to fix something that has been brewing for the landscape contractors for some time, who can construct water features. Law now reads that they can construct fountains and other things, but water features is broader than that. So how about ponds and that sort of thing? So what this bill does is it defines ornamental water features and removes the term fountains and inserts in its place that a landscape contractor can plan and install ornamental water features. We had some discussion with the landscape architects on this. They had some problems yesterday. We had discussion by phone with them. They no longer have those problems with the bill. And so I'm still aware of no opposition to the bill. There's no fiscal impact to it. And ask your favorable consideration of the bill.
Are there any questions? It's like a pretty straightforward change. It obviously isn't going to change the fact that these folks are still licensed. It's just going to add some extra duties that they can actually do within the law. And that's essentially it?
That's right, sir.
Any questions from the committee? Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2191? Well, seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open work session on House Bill 2191.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I move that House Bill 2191 be referred to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to water and, oh, no, never mind, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum has moved that House Bill 2191 be passed or be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any questions or discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Murphy? Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Everyone else is excused.
Thank you.
Who's not here?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move that House Bill 2191 be placed on the consent calendar.
Is there any objection to House Bill 2191 being placed on the consent calendar? If not, we will let it be placed on consent calendar. Having received the required number of votes, 2191 is declared passed, and we will close the work session.
2192 is closely related.
Is it? Like brother and sister type thing?
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Still moving out of order. House Bill 2192, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2192. Mr. Stenbridge?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is related to the previous. Current law authorizes landscape contractors to install irrigation backflow prevention devices. This will extend that authority to the same ornamental water features that you just discussed. It would authorize landscape contractors who are irrigation certified to install backflow prevention devices for ornamental water features.
Thank you. Mr. Cadell?
Mr. Chairman, I might also mention that there is an amendment posed for this one, and I will distribute that.
Okay. Please proceed.
Members of the committee, my name is Ken Cudell, administrator of Landscape Contractors Board. Some of you on the this committee will be surprised to know that in this case, the landscape contractors who have passed a test, and in this case, they passed a test to on backflow prevention devices, and several sessions ago, we negotiated an amendment to the law that would allow licensed landscape contractors to install, tap into the potable water supply and install a backflow prevention device for irrigation systems. This worked really well. Very few violations, very few games played with this. Well, now these ornamental water features are something that has come about, and most of those, if there's live water to it, you have a backflow prevention device also. And what this bill does is merely extends that so that they can tap into the water supply and install a backflow prevention device for ornamental water features as well as irrigation. And the bill has the support. We've worked with the plumbing board on this. They had a concern, and it's covered in the amendment that you have before you. To make sure that we're not dealing with a backflow prevention device inside a structure, we're dealing with one outside the structure.
Representative Sonnen.
Mr. Chair, don't you always have to have a backflow thing on anyway? I mean, don't they always have to install one, or is it always inside the house? I mean, this permits them to do that, but I just assume that you had to have that done all the time.
Representative Sonnen, any time that you have something like a water feature, there should be a backflow prevention device on it. What the plumbing board doesn't want happening is for landscape contractors to be dealing inside this structure. You got a whole different setup inside the structure. So if you had a water feature where you had to install that backflow prevention device inside the structure, then a plumber would have to install that. This only allows them to put in that backflow device if it's outside the structure.
Hello? But it isn't mandatory that they have to put that backflow in?
It is mandatory to have a backflow prevention device. Yes, it is.
Any other questions? Thank you. Did Joe Brewer want to testify?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Nope.
We will close the public hearing on 2192 and open a work session on 2192.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Zahn?
I would move that we send 2192 to the floor of the House if they do pass. Resolution.
Recommendation.
Bless
Representative Zahner has
bless
moved.
You for your memory.
Yes. Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 2192 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And we also have dash one amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I would move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2192.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the dash one amendment. Any objection to the dash one amendment being moved? Thank you. We will include the dash ones in the bill. Any discussion? No discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Tanner? Markham?
Aye.
Nelson? Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Zahner?
Aye.
No.
Aye. And those who are still absent are
excuse me. Was I called? Were you?
I'm sorry.
Aye.
We want to make sure that you're recorded.
That'll make the representatives feel bad real fast.
Yeah. Well, having received the required number of votes, we will declare that House Bill 2192 passed. Do I hear a motion for the...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I move that we move House Bill 2192 to the consent calendar.
Representative Backlund, who is here, has moved that House Bill 2192 be put on the consent calendar. Is there any objection to House Bill 2192 being put on the consent calendar? Hearing and seeing no objections, we will declare it so. How about that? Good enough? And are we going to need backup carriers for these, or are we just going to skip that?
The chair would be the backup carrier.
Man. Okay.
Unless you name someone else.
All right. Well, I'll just have to take my chances. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2192.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you. Could we reopen the work session on 2191 so that I can cast a vote, please?
Well, I sure could.
Great.
What was that? Mm-hmm. That was an awesome bill. Anybody?
I heard it on TV as I was pulling my own bill files.
Okay. Reopen a work session. We're going to reopen a work session on 2191. And Representative Walker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Walker votes aye, and we will.
Representative Wilson, maybe.
Yes, Representative Wilson, I believe you've come in since then, too.
Yes, I'd request to be able to vote. And that would be aye.
And Representative Wilson votes aye. Anybody else who's absent on that one?
No, they're on the other one while they're out of
it. I've got one.
Yes.
How many did we vote on? And we will close the work session on 2191. Sorry about that. We have another here for 2127.
Oh, yeah, everyone is here for 21. There we have 20 people here.
I'll start with you, Grant.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go back to the top of the calendar and open up with public hearing on House Bill 2127.
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that would create semi-independent status for the Landscape Contractors Board. You heard this initially on the 23rd of January. You did not hear from... Mr. Graham, who's the Executive Secretary of the Engineering Board, and also Mr. Qdell, who is the current Administrator of the State Landscape Contractors Board, was not here.
Thank you. I know that Mr. Graham is... Why don't we call Ed Graham to start out?
Members of the committee, my name is Ed Graham. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. I'm here to answer any questions I might concerning our status as a semi-independent state agency.
You were one of the first agencies to go semi-independent?
Yes, we were among the first five.
Among the first five. Could you explain a little bit to the committee how that process has worked for you since you went to the semi-independent status?
Yes, I will. From the standpoint of the board itself, little has changed. The only real difference in the way we operate today compared to the way we operated prior to 1997 is the way we deal with our financial arrangements. The rest of the bill, the rest of the statute remains intact. So as far as the authority of the board, the responsibility or accountability of the board, that has not changed. The bill, the rules and laws no longer are applicable to the board relate primarily to finance, where we keep our money, how we spend that money, how the budget is established, how we pay our bills. And from the standpoint of those changes, I have to say that it's far more efficient and effective than it was prior to our semi-independence, primarily due to the fact that the general government or the control process is designed for general fund agencies. We use no general fund monies or tax dollars in any way, shape, or form. Therefore, what we spend is that which is collected from the licensees, and they still have direct input concerning how the budget is adopted. We hold hearings. We're in the process of holding budget hearings now. We had one in January. We'll hold another in March and hopefully adopt our budget in May. Other than that, we've moved our funds into a private institution or a financial institution with FDIC insurance. Any revenue generated beyond $100,000 is fully collateralized, and the interest helps pay the rent. Other than that, the board is still under the laws and rules that we've always operated under.
Any questions for Mr. Graham?
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you describe how things changed in your relationship to the Department of Administrative Services?
Chair Canope, Representative Merkley, we're no longer reviewed from the standpoint of oversight by the Department of Administrative Services. We have no money in the Treasury. We're not accountable as far as their actions are concerned, since we're not subject to the Treasury process. We're still subject, of course, to rules related to purchasing, personnel, contracting, and this board essentially has adopted those particular segments of the purchasing, personnel, and contracting rules that are applicable to the board. The volumes of information related to purchasing and personnel is tremendous, but not all of it applies. We're unrepresented, so we don't deal with the bargaining units. Our purchasing, we still use public funds, even though the board collects and deposits those funds outside the Treasury, they're still public funds. So we comply with the public funds laws and rules. Purchasing is still done under the same scrutiny. Our solicitation process is according to the standards that are established by transportation, purchasing, and printing. If it's over $5,000, it goes to three proposals. Under $25,000, solicitation of at least bids. Over $75,000, it goes to formal request for proposals or quotes. So we still comply with those rules. We no longer have the privilege of using the personnel services, however. We do our own recruiting. We're unable to draw from lists of employees who might, or applicants who might be applying for state jobs, so we advertise separately. We're no longer assessed for any of those services, so we pay for the services that we receive, and those services are just simply not available to us.
Have you found there to be some savings there for you, or has that tended to be more expensive? And as it relates to supplies that you might have procured through desks, can you tell us your experience with those as well?
Sure. Nope. We didn't buy anything through DAS as far as materials are concerned. The services we received were guidance in personnel, purchasing, and other general administrative things. As far as savings are concerned, the greatest savings is with the time that's expended in processing. If we comply with the public finance laws and rules or within the scope of purchasing requirements, procedures are correct, we can have an item on site in the time it would take me to submit the paperwork for a request. And that's generally because the scrutiny that's required to expend general fund dollars, they're hard to come by.
Mm-hmm. Representative Murphy, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand that your personnel are no longer part of a bargaining unit they were previously?
Chair Canope, Representative Merkley, they have not been ever represented. We went out of the old Department of Commerce in 87 as unrepresented, classified. We remain unrepresented, classified. And we adhere to the same comp plan.
Sure.
Hello?
But your employees are official state employees and participate in PERS and so on and so forth.
Yes. We are a state employee.
Mr. Graham, who does your legal work? Is that still the Attorney General's office?
Still the Attorney General's.
And have you been, since there's no changes, you've been satisfied with being able to have them as your representative legally?
Yes, We are pleased with the Attorney General's representation. They've been able to provide additional assistance when our workload grows. We now have two Attorney General representatives working on contested case hearings right now. Thoroughly satisfied.
Any other questions for Mr. Graham?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Mr. Graham, do you collect fees or civil penalties? And could you describe, you said that all your finances go through a private bank now. Could you just describe how those are segregated from other funds? And
Chair Knope, Representative Rosenbaum, we do all of our cash hearings as far as our renewals and applications for licensure directly over the counter, as in any other business. We have two separate segments of the office. The process is bifurcated in that those revenues received are dealt with by some employees. The expenditure and deposit side is dealt with by other employees, and that's through the audit process. We meet the public finance requirements by having two separate entities. As far as our civil penalties are concerned, the board has the option under Senate Bill 1127 in the 99 session to either collect civil penalties and retain them or transfer those civil penalties to the general fund. And to date, we have transferred all of our civil penalties that are collected to the general fund. We generally go through the Attorney General's office to make those collections. Prior to 99, we went through revenue to collect those. But we collect civil penalties on occasion.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So the board decided to direct the penalties into the general fund. Is that correct? And have you been subject to Secretary of State audits since you've been in this status, and how frequently?
Nope. Representative Rosenbaum, we are subject to twice as many audits as any other general state agency. We're audited annually by the Secretary of State, or a contractor selected by the Secretary of State.
Thank you.
Mr. Graham, have your fees increased at all since you went to an independent status, and if so, by how much?
Chair Knope, let me explain exactly what took place. The fees have not increased since we became semi-independent. Taking a step back, the board doubled the fees prior to becoming semi-independent. That was in 97. The fees are presently at $40 per year for renewal of a license for engineering or for land survey. They have not changed things. There's no plan in the future, the near future, that we can see in this next biennium at least for any fee increases.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Graham. We appreciate your coming and giving us some testimony on it.
Thank you.
Looks like we have Ken Cadell back.
Chair Knope, members of the committee, I'm Ken Cadell, administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. Don't have prepared testimony for today. Come and answer some questions, but one of the differences that will occur with the Landscape Contractors Board, that if you choose to make it semi-independent, different from where the engineering board was and some others were when they became semi-independent. Since 1987, when the Department of Commerce was disbanded, done away with, the Landscape Contractors Board and the Construction Contractors Board, it was then the Builders Board, have operated under an interagency agreement, and the Landscape Contractors Board has no staff. They're all staff of the Construction Contractors Board. Landscape uses approximately 3.5% a composite person. So in a given week's time, we may have 20 employees might be doing something affecting Landscape Contractors Board activity. We keep track of that. We have a system to keep track of time
event in different parts of the Construction Contractors Board also, but we keep track of that to the nearest hour, and it comes out to be about 3.5%. So the challenge we have then, when you then create something that's going to be semi-independent and have their own staff, that 3.5% amounts to less than 2.5 employees. So what we would which employees are those? What we would propose to do is if semi-independence is the route that's chosen, what we propose to do is something like this. I think the bill calls for the semi-independence to fully kick in 1 year from July 1 of 2002. So on July 1 of 2001, I can find my sheet of paper here, I have my notes on. We, at that point, the Construction Contractors Board would begin helping the Landscape Board, and we'd develop job descriptions for 3 employees, because I think there's no way that this unit can operate with any less than that. That would be an administrator, and something at about a program rep level, and then something at about an office spec 2 level. So 3 employees, and we'd develop job descriptions for those 3 people, looking at all the things that have to be done. Most of what is done today will still have to be done when they're semi-independent. Some actually, the board will do some additional things. And so now 3 people are going to be doing things that right now we have employees, for instance, that do nothing but claims, and others do nothing but enforcement, and others do nothing but licensing. But this program rep 1 will have to be someone who can do all 3 of those. And so creating the job description, and then on or about January 1 of 2002, first off, also in that short period of time, we would then open recruitment to see if there are any employees of the CCB who would like one of these jobs. If there are none, or if you can't fill at least two of those positions, the program exec, the administrator, you may want to fill in a different fashion. But on staff, there would be people who could qualify for the other 2. And if no one wants those, then you would advertise outside. And you'd fill those positions as close to January 1 of 2002 as you could. And at that point, then you would, if you didn't get transfer, then the Construction Contractors Board would look at attrition to vacate a couple of positions, because there's no way we can justify having those 2 positions in CCB retained in there. And we have enough turnover of staff that you probably would have attrition, even if neither of those positions were filled from within Construction Contractors Board. What we plan on is having on April 1 of 2002, these 2 positions in place, and we would transfer the function. So they would be operating the claims and the licensing and the enforcement program. These 2 people would be operating, doing the things that they were going to be doing July 1, and they'd be doing them still part of this interagency agreement for another 3 months. About that same time, we would want to help them, the board, hire an administrator and get that administrator on board about April 1, so that about a three-month time period, so that he or she becomes acquainted with the program. It's going to have some duplicate functions there. That's just part of what's going to happen. We have the transfer of a computer from a joint computer system over to the semi-independent agency's computer system. It's all doable. It's just a case of putting together a schedule and working out what those costs are going to be and working on a time schedule. But I don't anticipate any problem with staff. The way the bill reads, I think, on page 2 of the bill, I think it reads with the having to do with bargaining, collective bargaining agreements. If it's desirable at the time that this becomes a separate unit, there would be 2 people who could qualify or who would be represented by the union over at Landscape Contractors Board. And the
administrator would, being management, would not be represented by the union. So that's all doable. It's not going to have an adverse impact upon any employee. And I understood that was one of the concerns that was voiced here at your first hearing on this. There is a person here also today that is familiar with these sorts of things and familiar with both of these boards. Our attorney from the Attorney General's office, Kathy Dahleen, is here. So you get into questions that are in the legal area. Kathy has a wealth of information in this area and has been advising the board on things that they need to be concerned about.
Great, thank you. Has the construction contractors board taken a position on the separation, or?
They've not taken a position one way or the other. I've kept them informed as to what is occurring. This interagency agreement is one, I describe it as a marriage not made in heaven. It has worked and worked well over the years, but the Landscape Contractors Board being 3.5%, it's pretty easy for them to develop the feeling that they're being dominated by the other 97%. And so that the Construction Contractors Board, this is going to have a temporary impact on some cost for them, but minor.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you. We have Mike Snyder and Larry Harvey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Larry Harvey. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. I have had distributed to you just some final points to make. I think that pretty much you have heard apparently more than enough information on this. I also, these documents were delivered this afternoon, and so when you get to page 2, it's not your eyesight, somehow. It was not printed properly, so I apologize. They came that way out of the envelope, so please accept my apology, and we will make sure that the record reflects the correct page to within the next 24 hours. The points there that to be made are self-explanatory, and it certainly don't need to be read to you, but it is sort of an outline of, again, the issues of what does semi-independent mean, and there's still quite a bit of responsibility there and lines of authority so that... We're not really talking about administration run wild. Page 3 there demonstrates currently the number of boards that are behaving, if you will, or acting, operating, if you will, under a semi-independent, and you just heard from Mr. Graham with regard to the engineering board. So that gives you the number of staff by the board with the board members and the number of licenses that they actually regulate. So this is not a new policy issue at this point, and has worked pretty well up until now for these other existing boards. And then that there's a narrative on pages 4 and 5 in the back that also explains to you exactly what the responsibilities that those boards regulate at this point. So there's a variety of things that they actually attend to with regard to their professional regulation of these various other semi-independent boards. Again, we just wanted to make sure that you had, there were some questions that had been asked previously. We wanted to make sure that we had brought forward as much information as possible, and we'll make sure that page 2 gets delivered directly to your offices and as well as to the committee administrator's office. Sorry, Mr. Stembridge. Beyond that, as you probably have already recognized, Mike Snyder is sitting to my left. And so if you have any final questions, we'd be happy to address those at this time.
Any questions? Representative Leonard?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to be clear about my reason for not supporting this. It's a couple. One is it has nothing to do with Landscape Contractors Board. fact, I think I said in the last hearing that I would support having it be its own standalone board with its attendant staff and costs. I just have this, it's just a philosophical issue of state entities not being accountable to elected officials directly through the budgeting process. And actually, the example of the other boards that operate as semi-independent boards, it just actually brings up the, what I would think would be the obvious concern that we don't have a policy on which boards or commissions are semi-independent and which aren't, and each one becomes semi-independent because somebody thinks to introduce a bill and persuade a particular legislative committee. And it would seem to me that if it's good for all of these plus your group, why don't we do all boards and commissions that way, have each one be semi-independent? So it seems like it's a fuzzy policy, and it's not one that has really been thought out entirely. I mean, one of the obvious impacts is as these boards and commissions pull out and are accountable to DAS, then the general fund agencies that are have costs that go up because they aren't sharing those costs. And so there are some actually general fund impacts. I realize not a lot in this particular case, but cumulatively there is. And all of that just hasn't been really thought out and discussed. These are treated on an individual basis and discussed individually without really a clear policy. So for those reasons, I will not support this, but I mean, it isn't like something I lay awake at night thinking about, but it's just kind of a philosophical disagreement I have for all of the reasons I've stated.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leonard, appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2127? Thank you.
I want to ask any questions for the Justice.
Yeah, does anybody have any questions for the Department of Justice Attorney while she's here? No? Okay, great. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2127. Likely we'll come up for a work session in the next couple of weeks. So we won't move it today, but make the committee aware that that's certainly a possibility. We're open going to go out of order again and open a public hearing on House Bill 2193. Mr. Stenbrick.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2193 has to do with landscape contractor addresses and notification. It requires landscape contractors licensed with the State Landscape Contractors Board to notify the board of any change of address within 10 days. It provides that a notice mailed by the Landscape Contractors Board to the landscape contractor's last known address is considered delivered.
Thank you. And on our witness list is, again, Ken Cadell from the LCB.
Members of the committee, I'm Ken Cadell, administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. Over the years, some things that have been in the Construction Contractors Board law, we've found them very useful, and another one of those that we've said, okay, it works very well here. Let's see if we can't get the same language into the Landscape Contractors Board bill law. And in this case, it's a case of if you've got a licensed individual, and they're to keep us advised of what their address is, and. And since we have that address, what this bill would do was declare that if we mail something to that address, it's deemed delivered. And this works well with claims. It works well with enforcement actions against licensed construction contractors. We believe it will work well with landscape. The way it is now, we have to
have to find that individual if we've got a claim against a landscaping business or landscape contractor. We have to be able to find that individual to deliver that notice of contested case, even though they were licensed at one point. They were licensed, maybe are still licensed, and we have their address. They aren't there, so we have to make sure that it is delivered to them. Now, the problem that we have with this bill, though, is one that we're going to try to fix with House Bill 2190. We've drafted a bill, and we've had our legislative council draft a bill, and we talked of landscape contractor. And we need to talk of landscape contractor, and we need to talk of landscaping business, because we've got both of those entities. But the business end of landscape contracting, the business is called a landscaping business. The individual who is in each, at least one in each company, owner or employee, is called a landscape contractor. So this bill needs an amendment, and I just found this out. I was reminded by staff person just yesterday. We need to put landscaping business in there. It's not quite as simple as just a one-word amendment. So what I would ask is that we be able to get the amendment and bring it back to you at another time. It won't say change the concept, but it'll fix it so that both the business and the individual have to keep us notified, because we're going to mail stuff to them at the last address that they gave us.
Any questions for Mr. Cadell?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Mr. Cadell, the amendment that you're suggesting, would it be that both the contractor and the business need to keep you apprised of their address? I mean, my read of this is that each of these businesses now has to have at least one licensed person, but you could have like a sole proprietor licensed person, and you could also have a business.
Sure, can I,
so there would be two tracks of registration where they have to keep informing you of their address.
They would, and oftentimes it would be the same one. I'm so and so individual license number, so and so business license number, and my new address is such. But there are companies out there that are just the owner of the business is not a landscape contractor. Is not a landscape contractor, and that's what's missing in this bill, because we refer entirely to landscape contractor. And so if it was a business, if I owned a landscaping business and I weren't a landscape contractor, that individual that's qualified, then we wouldn't get an address change. So we've got to get both of them in there, even though in two-thirds of the cases, the business is owned by the individual that has a landscape contractor's license. We're going to try to fix that in this other bill, so when we get a chance to talk about that one, get away from the dual license bill and call it something different.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Cadell, I noticed in the staff summary, in terms of the subject of notifying the LCB of a change of address within 10 days. Just for my curiosity, why was it 10 days picked? Why not 30 or why not 20?
I can't answer that. That's just what's in statute. It hasn't created that kind of a problem for us at this point, but if you would choose 30 days, I don't have a problem with that.
I don't know that I have an objection either. It just struck me as kind of interesting that somehow the amount was 10 days. Representative Zahner.
Yes, Mr. Chair. If they don't comply and notify you, how do you enforce it, and is there a penalty?
Representative Zahner, the penalty will occur generally when they get a notice and it's delivered, but they don't get it. And so they don't have the opportunity to challenge a proposed order. Okay. So that's where the penalty will occur. And so if somebody filed a claim against them, the claim may go all the way through to a final order, and they don't know about it. So we tell them to keep us notified, and this does do a better job of with Construction Contractors Board on keeping us notified, because, again, we need to be able to mail to them things that affect their license.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Cadell. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2193?
We have not ordered, Mr. Chairman, we have not ordered this amendment. I became aware of it just before the meeting, so I would suggest holding this over for a week.
Sounds like a reasonable idea.
Unless you want to move it without the amendment.
I really don't. We will close the hearing on House Bill 2193 and bring it back at a later date when we have the amendment. Okay. Okay, open a public hearing on House Bill 2194. Mr. Stembridge.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill relates to new business forms that have been created by the legislature in the last few sessions. This bill allows the Landscape Contractors Board to discipline limited liability companies and limited liability partnerships. It extends the board's discipline authority to licensees who have had a landscaping license revoked in another state, failed to repay a claim payment made by a surety, or failed to comply with Oregon's public contracting or prevailing wage statutes in addition.
Okay. And Mr. Cadell.
Members of the committee, I'm Ken Cudell, Administrator of the Landscape Contract Board. Mr. Stembridge has pretty well laid that out, the changes. My written testimony would show that the changes that are merely allowing us to deal with all of the entities are out there are on page 1, lines 18 to 21 and 29 to 30. And then on page 2, lines 33 to 35. All of those changes do is add the ability to discipline limited liability company, limited liability partnership, and legislative council has said, and any other business entity, so that we don't have to come back at some future date when somebody comes up with another entity, which surely will happen. The amendment to line 1 on page 1, line 5, is merely one to make it clear that in addition to suspending or revoking, that we could combine that with a civil penalty. Then the new authorities are contained on page 1, line 25 to 28. And again, if somebody owes an amount to a surety company has paid money out, but we allow that person to come back and become licensed again. Surety companies ask us to put that. California and Washington have that kind of language in their statutes. Or somebody who's had their license to operate as a landscaping business revoked by another state. We've recently joined an organization, I think I told you last Tuesday when I was here, the National Association of State Contractor Licensing Agencies, and they have a list of revoked contractors, and we'd like to be participating more in that than we are now, so that we don't have somebody coming from one state to the other. And so this ability to do that would be helpful to the industry and to the people of Oregon, I think. The other changes are in Section 2 of the bill that, again, if the contractor is not in compliance with the public contracting laws or with BOLI laws, we would be able to discipline them just the same as we do when they're not in compliance with revenue or employment or workers' comp laws.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? No questions. Thank you. And we don't need any amendments to this one?
Mr. Chairman, I've been notified of no amendments.
Nice clean bill, huh? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2194, open a work session on House Bill 2194.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard moves House Bill 2194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions or discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Just for clarity, I want to understand that the letter we have to Mr. Dale, it notes the following amendments. It's actually just referring to House Bill 2194.
Yeah, Mr. Cadell, your letter says here amendments, and that's what confused me a little bit too. You're just meaning changes. Thank you for the clarification, Representative Merkley. Any other questions? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Merkley?
Aye.
Nelson? Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Leno?
Aye.
Leno?
Aye. And let the record show that Representative Nelson was excused. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2194 is declared passed. Is it the committee's wish to appoint a carrier and or send it to the consent calendar? Representative Walker and Representative Wilson have suggested the consent calendar, which seems reasonable to me. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Representative Rosenbaum has moved that we send House Bill 2194 to the consent calendar. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, hearing none. Consent calendar it is. Closed the work session on 2194, and let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2190.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2190 changes the name of licensed landscape contractor to responsible managing individual, and changes the name of landscape business to landscape contractor in the state Landscape Contractors Board statutes. It authorizes a non-owner individual to serve as the responsible managing individual for no more than one landscape contractor. And again, that is the new term, landscape contractor. And allows a landscape contractor to operate for up to 90 days without a responsible managing individual. Again, as those are terms that are used in the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Cadell.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Cudell, administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. Last legislative session, we had two or three bills before the same committee. Representative Meyer was the chair of that committee, and one of the reasons why he has not as much hair as some people have today, I think he pulled some of it out, concerned with this crazy back and forth between the landscape contractor and landscaping business. It is very confusing because every place else we use construction contractor as being a business. In this bill, we use landscape contractor as being an individual. And so what we're proposing to do is to call the individual that is the qualified individual in each company, calling that a certification, because they really aren't getting a license to do anything. They're certified to have certain skills and knowledge. And we're going to call them a responsible managing individual and call this business a landscape contractor. And we think it will serve well in the years ahead to make this change. We ask your favorable consideration of the bill.
Are there any people who are licensed like community college instructors or retired people who aren't really employed by landscape businesses?
Chairman, there obviously are some. The total number that we have, there's something like 1,200 licensed landscape contractors, individuals, and about 940 businesses. So you've got a few that fit that category.
And their license then would read responsible managing individual?
Yes.
Was there any thought given to maybe a more professional sounding name? I mean, if they're not managing a business, maybe something like certified landscaper or something of that nature. I'm not sure that responsible management individual gets at the heart of what they actually are if they don't have a business and maybe they're teaching or something like that.
This was an argument that came up at the board meeting, several board meetings where the board discussed this, and the board would rather that it be called responsible managing individual. But I'm pretty confident that they want to change, and responsible managing individual was what they wanted, and I think it should be called certified rather than licensed, because it isn't anything to do something. I think the certified, getting a name change and calling it certified as opposed to licensed is the two primary things that need to happen with this bill. Responsible managing individual fits with some other things. In most cases, that is what this individual will be, is they'll be the individual that's managing that company. But there was thought given to it, sir, they decided to go, a seven-member board decided to go with the responsible managing individual.
Is there an exam that they have to take?
There is an exam, pretty extensive exam. The exam is in multiple parts, it's in looking around and looking at other exams, it's equivalent to taking an exam. The technical knowledge would be equivalent to the kind of technical knowledge that a plumber would have, that kind of a test. It's a very extensive test.
Is there anything on the test that deals with how to run a business or how to manage a business?
There is. There is a section.
There's a section on that?
Yes. It's both technical and business-oriented.
Any other questions from committee members? Representative Merkley?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to ask about the 90-day period in this bill that allows the contractor, that is the business, to operate without the responsible managing individual, that is the person who has gone through the exam. And could you give us a little history as to how this provision came to be included in this bill?
Sure, Representative Merkley, without something in statute, we have to do this by administrative rule, and there is at some point every business. The statute now reads every business has to have somebody on staff who has those qualifications. Well, it doesn't make sense that if we get a business, a landscaping business, a corporation, and the qualified individual dies, then that business is out of business until such time as they can get a replacement. 90 days just seem like a reasonable time period for them to do that.
Mr. Chair, if I can
follow up.
My concern comes from the scope of work that is undertaken by landscape contractors, and certainly we just had a bill that involves the process of preventing water from being sucked up back into the sanitary water system. And I'm assuming that wiring also occurs for these water projects. So you have electricity and water next to each other. In most other areas, if, for example, a plumbing business loses its certified or licensed plumber, it it's not going to be able to keep plumbing, I don't believe, without that plumber, so I can be corrected by people who know more. I guess maybe it's a question. And certainly an electrician firm, electrical firm, couldn't continue to install wiring without having somebody trained in wiring. And so given the level of responsibilities that the contractor, that is the business, undertakes, is it appropriate for them to continue providing services without somebody trained in providing those services?
Chair, Representative Merkley, the difference in landscape contractor law and in the plumbing law and the electrical law is that for most things, the party on a landscape project, the party who does the work doesn't have to be a licensed individual. There's somebody licensed in each company. Now, the backflow prevention device is different in that the party who installs that backflow prevention device has to be somebody who has passed the test. So that wouldn't happen. So if the owner of a company or the responsible managing individual in the company was the one that had that license to install backflow prevention devices, if that person died or was no longer part of that company, then that company would have to find another individual who had that or to go to a plumber to get that installed. And the wiring, the only wiring that a landscape contractor can do is low voltage wiring. So any hard wiring would have to be done by a licensed electrician.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cadell, it's looking to me, reading through this, like there's a new concept of a letter of credit introduced as an alternative to a deposit or bond. Is the bill making a change that would allow a contractor to post a letter of credit? Maybe I haven't read all the way through, but there are several places where letter of credit isn't in the statute right now. Inserted.
Sure, the letter of credit is already there.
It
may have moved it to a couple of spots. One of the things that happens when you have this kind of an amendment is legislative council looks at it and says there's a better way of saying some things, so they make some other changes that in their mind improve the language, and I'm sure it does, but they don't change it. They already can provide a letter of credit
as an alternative to a bond or.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Due to some of the language in this bill, it sounds to me like it's you have situations where responsible managing individuals working for several companies, is on contract to several companies. Is it standard practice then that essentially a crew is out there working who isn't necessarily trained but they're given direction, and then the responsible managing individual checks out their work, makes sure that it's acceptable to state codes or safety and so on and so forth?
Chair, Representative Murphy, that's what the board wants to happen. That was what was intended, and we've had a few instances of people kind of selling their license, and that's what this would stop happening. So that if I'm the qualified individual for a company, then I'm only the qualified individual for one company. And so that I am available to be there to make sure that the work is done. One of the reasons for licensing in landscape is that there is no code for landscape, as opposed to most construction, you'll find some kind of code. There is a code for retaining walls, and there's a code for certain other things, but most of what landscape does, there is no code for it. So is it done to the standards that are the normal standards for doing landscaping in the state of Oregon? And that's what that individual is responsible to make sure that his company does work up to that standard.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So are you saying this bill changes it so that one person cannot work for multiple companies?
This bill indicates that you can only work for one company at a time. Yes, it does say that.
Where is that at?
On page 9, section 19, indicates that a certificate issued pursuant to the ORS qualifying an individual to act as a responsible managing individual is a personal privilege and not transferable. Is that what you were referring to, Mr. Cadell?
No, sir. The area, I thought there was a spot where it said he can only work for one.
Page five, we got some stuff.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I believe it's in the middle of page five, as Representative Zahner has pointed out. Starting on page five, line 17, it says, if an individual acts as a responsible managing individual for more than one landscape contract, the individual may not act as a responsible managing individual for more than one contractor in which the individual lacks an ownership interest. For purposes of this subsection, an individual lacks an ownership interest in landscape contract. An individual does not own at least 20% of the contractor as measured by board rule.
Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Schneider, Mr. Harvey. Even though you're not signed up to testify, I'd like to hear from a licensee on this RMI business. Yeah.
That's why he leans his head against the wall.
I'll teach you that not often.
I know. Don't believe that.
Well, he wasn't alone, Chair.
For the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm a landscape contractor, individual, and business in the state of Oregon. And I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Did you know that this RMI, Responsible Managing Individual, change was taking place? And is that okay with you?
I am aware that this action is being taken. My initial response to it was very confusing to me. However, I do see the need for getting rid of dual licensing. We have some problems in the industry where people are contractors, or they're called a landscape contractor, and they're out doing work without being bonded, insured, and we have people selling their license. And so it caused some problems. I don't know if the wording is actually correct. As you brought up, RMI doesn't sound very professional to me, but I don't know how to solve that problem at this point.
Any questions? Representative Merkley?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to ask for your perspective on the same issue about a company continuing to perform contracts for 3 months without an RMI. If this is the person who's supposed to be supervising the work and making sure that the customer and ordinary is satisfied and ordinary standards are met, isn't that an awfully long time to go without such a person, the person who's gone through the training?
Chair Knopp and Representative Merkley, I agree with that perspective on yours. I believe that I understand the reason that they don't want to put somebody out of business just because there's an event of death or something like that that happens. So I understand the reason. I believe that there is a risk that would take place. I think that time might want to be shortened. I don't know what the appropriate time is, but I would think in the case that there was a job that was already being done, and a company had been contracted to do the work, and then the responsible individual died or there's something that happened, to stop work would be a hardship to the consumer and also to the contractor, to the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that standpoint, I understand the wording, how to solve that problem so that they are actively getting some an RMI, in this case, back on the job, would be a difficult one to answer.
Mr. Chair, follow up on that.
Follow up?
It sounds to me that any other person in the business could work for at least one other company without having ownership interest. So isn't there the prospect of turning to one of one's colleagues in the business to fill in a gap and making sure that customer is still well taken care of while one's hiring a new full-time person?
Chair Knapp, Representative Merkley, could you repeat the provision is?
Yes, it's my understanding that anyone who owns such a company can also work for one other company that, in which they don't have an ownership interest. And so couldn't you essentially turn to one of your colleagues in the business to fill in such a gap on a short-term basis?
All right. Mr. Cadell, do you answer to that?
He may not.
Can I call him?
The chair will call Mr. Cadell.
Thanks, I'm sorry.
Representative Merkley, can you repeat the question?
Absolutely. The question is, in trying to get a sense of how much flexibility there is in the current system without the 90-day provision, and it appears from the other language in here that a person running a similar business can also work for one other business in which they don't have an ownership interest. So if I own a company and my RMI, as it's been so artfully called, passes away or quits or leaves the state, can't I turn to one of my colleagues in the business to fill in and making sure that things are covered with somebody who has expertise until I can hire another full-time individual?
Sure. Representative Merkley, the currently we covered this by administrative rules, and I think how we arrived at the 90 days, we arrived at that because that's what we do by this. But yes, they could go but the individual has to be, we've got the word employee. Mm-hmm. It's not a contract, it would be an employee. They'd have to be an employee of this company. That's difficult to do. The fact is that we don't know often when this vacancy has occurred. They might operate for a number of months today without us knowing that the responsible managing individual is no longer there. Again, the 90 days to me seems to be a reasonable period of time. We'd hope that they would have one there immediately, but I can't tell you that it's any real strong reason why it has to be 90 days. It just that's the way we've been operating with it, and chose to try to put it in statute as opposed to putting it in administrative rule. Right now, without it there, you have immediately. The business is really not a business any longer as soon as that responsible managing individual is gone, the way the law currently reads.
One other question on this, at risk of wearing it out. It's noted on page 4, line 8, and it defines the RMI as a person who supervises a landscaping operation or who undertakes or submits to a bid. Without the RMI at the company, can anyone at the company undertake these responsibilities, or is a company basically unable to undertake, submit bids until they have hired on an RMI?
Chair Pinot, Representative Merkley, at the present time, we have not disciplined a company for doing this without an RMI there. But I think the way that the statute reads is that the individual should be there to supervise that. So I think the answer to your question is no, they shouldn't be able to submit bids on new projects until such time as they have an RMI that's qualified to supervise that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Mr. Cadell, as long as we've got you up here, I realize that the board's intent is to clear up confusion, but this does seem extremely confusing, and I would just ask you, how do you propose that this would be effective January 1st of next year, I assume, because it doesn't have an emergency clause. How do you propose to implement these changes and inform people in the landscape business?
Sure. Representative Rosenbaum, the board does a newsletter four times a year.
and through the newsletter. As the same as we've done at least twice, we've notified all of our landscape contractors, all of our landscape businesses, that this is a bill that we're proposing. So they're aware that the bill is there, and we would then, if the bill passes, we would then notify them that this is what the situation is. You're no longer called this, you're called that. You're no longer licensed, you're now called certified. When we reissued the license, landscape is on an annual license basis. When we reissued the license or certification, the next time we issued it, we put a different title in the different certification or license on it. Okay. It will take some time to get there. It will take some time. I don't know how we got, again, it's something I believe needs to be fixed, but and there's going to be a little confusion as we get it fixed, but give us about a year, and I think all that confusion will be gone.
Thank you. Any other questions? And no amendments needed on this one?
One comment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Harvey.
Larry Harvey, again, for the record, Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. It is not as though we are not paying attention to this bill, so I would like the committee not to misunderstand. From a timing basis only, the Landscape Contractors Association has not yet, their legislative committee has not had an opportunity to take an official position. That's simply a timing matter. We'd be happy to forward our comments or our official position or whatever it might be titled as soon as they meet, which I think is before the end of this month anyway, as I recall. So we just didn't want the committee to be misunderstanding that it's not as though we're oblivious to this. We just can't give you an official position because it's the wrong time of the year.
Do you know if there are any concerns about the titles that your members may have?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be safe to say that there are a variety of other opinions as to what the title may or may not be, and we've worked with Mr. Cadell, and if more work is needed, we'll be happy to sit down with him and to whatever extent it takes to make sure that this is cleared up and a little easier to understand. That's your request.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2190. I think we'll hold this one over for a little bit so we can digest the name change and see if there's any further need or amendment on that bill. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2195.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2195 is a mutual exemption. This is an exemption for landscape designers from landscape contract licensure, and there are a number of exceptions to that exemption, and the main ones seem to relate to the designs that include government-related natural areas.
Mr. Cadell.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Ken Cadell, Administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. Several months ago, we asked our attorney for advice on an individual who was doing planning but not installing. The words in the landscape contractor's 675-20 contain the words plan and install or any part thereof. And someone had turned in an individual who was doing landscape design. And when we asked our attorney about that issue, we were advised that the way the law reads, we should be requiring landscape designers to be licensed by the board. About that same time, we got some discussion going with the Landscape Architect Board, and I believe they have a bill. I believe it's been assigned to your committee. I don't know that for a fact, but I believe it has been. It's 2196. Is that?
No, I believe.
It is.
And we met with the landscape designers rather than have nothing in the way of complaints from the public that says landscape designers are causing problems. And so it would be a fiscal impact to go and try to regulate them, even though the law says that we're supposed to. So we're looking for a way to not regulate landscape designers. And at the same time, then, we have to define what are we talking about as what does a landscape designer do? And so working with the architect, the landscape architects, a couple of my board members came up with the definitions that are in this bill, and what we propose is that the Landscape Contractors Act be changed to make it clear that landscape designers, and defining what a landscape designer is, are exempt from this law.
Any questions from the committee? Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
Have you defined what a landscape designer does? I mean, do we have those?
Chair, can I Rep. Seems on it? I think we have on page 2 of the bill. As best as we can, a person engaged in making conceptual plans or drawings for the selection and general placement. And this is the same language, or virtually the same language, that you would see in the architect's bill, that if you see that at some later time.
Okay.
Right now, landscape designers can call yourself a landscape designer because the Construction Contractors Board has chosen, or didn't know we had to until recently. We have to either have an amendment to this law to get them out, or we have to start licensing them. And so we believe this is the appropriate amendment, and the landscape designers we've met with are comfortable with this amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2195? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2195. Let's open up work session on House Bill 2195.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Donner.
I make a motion we pass this on to the House and ask for a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved that we send House Bill 2195 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Just a clarification. Are we letting the category of professionals out from under one licensing requirement and intending to pick them up under another licensing requirement in a bill that we haven't heard yet?
No. I don't believe so. Mr. Cadell is shaking his head no.
No.
Representative Walker is shaking her head no.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was reading the letter from Mr. Cadell, and he says this bill allows landscape designers to continue to do what they do without requiring regulation. That was my assumption.
That being clarified, any other questions? Any discussion? Not, the clerk will call the roll.
Nelson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Backlund?
Aye.
Chairman?
Excuse.
Merkley?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Haven't received the required number of votes. House Bill 2195 is declared passed. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that this be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Wilson has made a motion to place House Bill 2195 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, may it be declared so.
And we will close the work session on House Bill 2195. Open a public hearing on 2201, House Bill 2201.
Mr. Chairman, you saw a similar measure that dealt with the Construction Contractors Board. This deals with the Landscape Contractors Board. It allows Landscape Contractors Board to require claims hearings to be conducted as binding arbitration unless either party elects otherwise.
Mr. Bill Boyd from the CCB. Just the same song, second verse?
Eric, you know, this is such the same song, second verse, that if you look at my letter dated February 1st, you'll see that we have the House bill from the CCB not in the restatement on that letter. I guess I'll have to say it's no accident if this letter looks very similar to the letter you received on Tuesday. I don't know whether you want me to go through my testimony, my complete testimony for the record, or just make reference to it.
Let's make reference to it unless anybody has any real concern that they want to hear it all again. I don't see anybody anxious to do that.
Okay. And I'll just make reference to my testimony for HB 2201 and this, for the same reasons that we were asking for that bill, we are asking for this bill primarily to deal with, because we believe that arbitration provides a better approach to dealing with damages in these claims cases. We also have the same problem with that bill, with this bill, as we did with that bill, in that we need to make an amendment to deal with the hearing officer panel, and that amendment would specify that the arbitration, the arbiters would be taken from the hearing officer panel. It would also incorporate a provision in the hearing officer panel statutes that allows a party to request that they get a different in this case it would be a different arbitrator instead of a different hearing officer. Under the hearing officer panel rules, if you feel that the first choice you're given is you don't like that person, you get a request of right, and you can ask for somebody else. I think that anything after that, you'd have to show cause, to recall. I noticed that Tom is in the audience and ready to testify. Maybe he can explain that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, we would ask that you... I believe that what we decided it was is that you would go ahead and pass this bill to the House floor, and it would go to judiciary, and we would make that amendment at that point. There are some dash one amendments with this one that we also would ask.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Boyd?
Just one.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Boyd, I just want to clarify the record, since that's what I do for a living. You said you were referencing the testimony on House Bill 2201, but this is House Bill 2201. Sorry. You were referencing 2202, correct?
Chair Canope, Representative Walker, you have a good ear. My testimony, prior testimony was 2202, and that was on the CCB law.
Right.
Thank you for the clarification.
Impressive.
Indeed. Any questions for Mr. Boyd? Thank you. Mr. Ewing.
I'm going to waive the testimony heard in
No blood oath or anything on this one? We'll trust them. Anyone else wishing to testify on 2201? Seeing nobody, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2201.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2201.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2201. Is there any objection? Hearing none and seeing none, may it be declared so.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I move House Bill 2201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a subsequent referral to Judiciary be added.
Representative Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Judiciary.
Good. Right on the button.
Representative Walker.
I have a question about procedure.
Yes.
Why would we bother to even send it to the floor first? Why shouldn't it just go to Judiciary?
Mr. Stembridge has an answer.
Ah.
The form of the motion is all that we're talking about here. You're sending it to the floor due pass with a subsequent referral to Judiciary. You wouldn't send it to Judiciary wanting them to due pass it. You want the floor to due pass it. So that's why you say to the floor due pass.
Well, I understand that,
that's
Mr. Stembridge, but I mean, it just seems like a long circuitous route to get it to where it needs to go, and then it's going to come back to the floor again. But who am I to object? I just seems.
Well, technically, we're not sending it to the floor for a vote before it goes to Judiciary. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It does not go to the floor for a vote, but it does get returned to the desk where it gets the subsequent referral from the desk.
I see. So we aren't going to vote on it. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
It sounds confusing to me, too, and I asked the same question.
Oh, good. You're of like mind on that. Thank you.
We are indeed. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Jackson.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Beckham.
Aye.
Leonard.
Murphy.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
No. Aye. And Representative Leonard, who I missed, is excused. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2201 has been moved to the floor in Judiciary Committee. Close the work session on 2201. I believe
we're done.
That completes our agenda. Is that correct, Mr. Stembridge?
Unless I forgot some files up in my office, we've worked through all the files that I brought with me.
I think that's it. Mr. Representative Merkley.
I'd like to extend the courtesy to Representative Nelson if she'd like to vote on any of the bills that she missed.
Representative Nelson, do you wish to vote on any of the bills that you missed?
Yes, I sure would, Mr. Chair.
You do. Well, let's see.
in support of this fine committee and the strength thereof.
Sarah, are you ready? We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2191. Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Close the work session on House Bill 2191. Open a work session on House Bill 2192. Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
I vote aye, Mr. Chair.
Can you close the work session on House Bill 2192? Open a work session on House Bill 2194. Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
Mr. Chair, I vote aye.
Close the work session on House Bill 2194. And you were here for 2195, is that right?
Yes, sir, I was, Mr. Chair.
And 2201, you were here for?
Yes, sir.
And we held over 2190 and 2127. Did that take care of all? And we held over 2193, didn't we?
Yes.
So I think you're good to go.
Thank you for that courtesy, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. And may adjourn.
I hope you feel a little excited.
Yeah, no kidding.